Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Truth, lies, shenanigans. Truth, lies, shenanigans.
Hey, welcome to the Truth, Lies, Shenanigans podcast, social commentary, hot topics, and amazing guests with a ton of fun and shenanigans along the way. Today's show, Victoria Kulik shares her terrifying experience getting stuck in Ukraine while visiting family. Then we've got some hot topics. Robbie will discuss the human rights abuses in Qatar ahead of the World Cup. The FIFA World Cup. Lizzie has a story of Shanquilla Robinson's strange death in Mexico. And I want to talk about Hakeem Jeffries, who's poised to become the first Black leader in Congress. But before we get into the show, let me introduce you to my co-hosts. First up, our lovely professor, journalist, and editor streaming live from Washington, D.C., Miss Liz E.
What's up, everyone? Happy Sunday. Fun day. Hope everyone had a good week. Across the United States, though, it's been a pretty tough week. It's been a pretty violent week. We had two mass shootings, one as recently as last night at a nightclub. So far, five people were killed. A mass shooting earlier this week, actually last Sunday at the University of Virginia's campus in Charlottesville, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And then we had four students who were stabbed to death at the University of Idaho. So it's been a very violent week in the United States. And fortunately, it's become a sign of the time. Don't know how we get away from that. But I just want everyone to pause, like stop, pause, calm down, and realize that violence should not be your first go-to. Killing each other should not be your first go-to. And it's been pretty sad news all around.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been coming the norm now, unfortunately.
Yes.
Especially in the U.S. All right.
Right.
And next up, our nature lover, gamer, rock star coming to you from Ontario, Canada, Mr. Robbie Rock.
What's up? So winter has arrived in Northern Ontario. We have snow. And it did inspire my wife and I to decorate for the holidays. Yeah.
Yay!
So, yeah, we put up a tree, we put up festive lighting, we started sorting gifts nice. For various people on the list, and we purchased a few more ornaments just to balance out some of the tree themes. Balance out the tree theme. There we go.
We got the National
Christmas moose mug, a couple of Christmas characters, Ahsoka Tano, plain old stormtrooper. We just have nerdy decorations. Merry Festivus.
Nice. Merry Festivus.
I'm being all inclusive, baby.
So all-inclusive. All of us.
Gianna, you know what Festivus is? I'm just out of curiosity.
Oh, no. I thought he just made it up like on the spot right now.
I mean, it is made up, buddy, but it wasn't on the spot.
That vote of confidence. I appreciate that.
All right. And our college student, model, entrepreneur, streaming from Atlanta, Georgia, Miss Gianni Storm.
Hey guys, I missed you. This week has been chill for me. I know last time I told you guys my car was broken into, and then days after that, my car was actually stolen. But
the entire car was stolen this time?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It just went escalated.
It sounds more and more.
Go back into quarantine. We got to go back into quarantine, folks.
Good Lord.
Yes. No voluntary quarantine. But no, things are all good. I've been saging. I've been protecting and praying because I just feel like.
You've been saging?
Because the cops won't do it. There's no protection out there.
But the cops won't protect her.
The cops won't protect her, so she's got to do sage.
Exactly. So, Lizzie, you were right. Everybody listen to Lizzie. Stop resorting to crimes and violence and just calm
especially
down. Go
crimes
home.
Against Gianni.
Yes. Of all people. Especially not me. But no. Not me, man. All right. It's been a good week. It's been a good week for me, though.
All right, good. All right, and of course, I'm Neil Nix. I am a little sick today, so I apologize if my voice is a little off. But now you know why, and I'll be sucking the hell out of some cough drops for the rest of the show. I'm actually not sure what I have. No, it's not COVID because I tested like 3 times just to be sure. But it's like, I don't know, nowadays we're just like, everything's COVID. That's like the first thing I thought of. I must have COVID. But I think it's picked up something else. There's like a billion other diseases out there. So who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? All right, let's not keep our guests waiting any longer. She's got quite a story to tell. I will warn you, some of this conversation may be graphic, so discretion is advised. That's hard to believe, but the war in Ukraine has been going on for nearly 9 months now, going on a year. Started back in February when Vladimir Putin decided to invade Ukraine, claiming that he was trying to reunify the former Soviet Union. And since then, over 200,000 soldiers on both sides have been estimated to have been killed. Over 6,000 civilian deaths have been verified, and nearly 500 of those are children. But with the number of mass graves found in areas retaken by Ukrainian forces, reports of Russian soldiers as executing civilians, and the ongoing bombings, it's estimated that over 40,000 civilians have actually been killed since the war started. Now, today's guest, Victoria Kulik, who also goes by Vita, went to visit her family in Ukraine just before the war started and ended up getting stuck there. She just recently returned to the U.S. after finally safely escaping through Poland, and she's here to tell her terrifying story. Hey, Vita.
Hey. Welcome. Yeah. Welcome.
How are you?
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Welcome to the podcast. Now, I've just got to start out with, how are you? How are you doing these days, and how's your family? Is your family okay?
You know, the how are you question has been very symbolic recently in Ukraine. This question is like the we know the answer. We know that there is no proper answer to this, but saying it expresses just love and support for the other. Just saying, just asking, you know. So to answer that, it just it's okay. When it's not okay, but it is all right.
Okay.
That's good. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, I honestly can't imagine what it must have been like for you.
Neither do I.
So then let's go back. How did you find yourself in Ukraine back when the war started?
So you know that in Ukraine the Christmas is a little different. The Christmas starts and all the holidays starts in January, not in December. So I was so excited after 2.5, probably up to 3 years not being home. I was so excited to go back for the holidays. And you know, the Russian troops have been gathering near the border probably since November, maybe October, November before.
Yeah.
And everybody's here was telling me, oh, like, look what's happening. Ukraine is now like everywhere on the news. We have never heard about Ukraine so much like these days and stuff like that. But I was like, ah, guys, come on. This is crazy. Nobody would invade. No, like the war wouldn't start. It's just the trick to scare us or something. I didn't believe it to the last point, even when all the intelligence in the world while being in Ukraine, you know, they were saying probably February 16th, I think, that they would invade. And all the flights were postponed and stuff like that. So I'm like, no, it's not happening.
You thought for sure it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. I was sure.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like, at peace to the last point.
That's faith.
Yeah.
Do you think that you weren't thinking that there was going to be a war? Because there's been tension between, you know, Ukraine and Russia for years, and Putin's been threatening for years. So did a lot of that go in your mind? Like, okay, this is just another threat from Putin. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. So basically, Ukraine has been in war since 2014 when Russia invaded the Donbass region, Donetsk and Luhansk regions, right? Mm-hmm. All the east of Ukraine, and they annexed Crimea the same year, primarily to that invasion. So it's been going on, and you're getting used to it. You're getting used to, which I feel so sorry for right now. But even back at home, you're getting used to it. It's something that is there. once in a while you hear some stories about it. In the beginning of 2014, 2015, there were like more or less aggressive action, and you hear it and every day. But after that, you're getting used to it. Like the news are not resembling it as much. The newspapers or the internet news, you don't hear it as much unless you are in that field, unless you are being volunteering in the military or helping the military throughout all of these years, you don't hear as much.
All right. So February 24th hits and Putin decides to invade. Now, what's going through your mind? What's going through your families? What are you guys? And where are you at the time?
I'm in my bed. I live in the west side of Ukraine. So we didn't receive the whole shooting and airstrikes up until like later.
Okay.
Like that day, probably nobody can forget because everybody has different experience and everybody had a different perception of it. For me, it was 6 a.m. when my dad woke up and he turned on the news and I hear him saying, "Oh my gosh, they are shooting." And I'm like, "No, what?" Like through my dream and everything, you know, I'm like, no, it's not happening. And then my brother wakes up at the same time and then I understand that they invaded. So I wake up, my whole body is numb and like very, very prominent feeling that I will never forget because this numbness will go for days, for like 2 or 3 days. It's like completely numb. You just like see the news when all the TV channels united and they were translating what's happening everywhere. So you just like stuck at one place and just watching the news.
Did you and your family formulate a plan in that moment to have to leave immediately or was it still kind of panic?
You know, we've been warned before to gather a so-called safety backpack, which like would consist of the documents or, you know, some money or some valuable stuff. Anything that you would need to travel, some matches, lights, and stuff like that. But honestly, my family didn't do it. We didn't do it. The decision that we didn't even talk about, didn't discuss, was to stay no matter what. And if they come, they would have to kill us to leave, like to take our land or to take our apartment and that kind of thing. So kind of silently, it just went between us. And that's it. We never thought of leaving.
Do you have any friends or family that are currently serving in the Ukrainian Armed Forces? And if so,
I have friends.
Are you able to communicate with them?
I have friends who are serving there. I've been able to get in touch with some of them. Without them, I'm getting in touch through other people. Fortunately, they've been not in the front line. They've been on the second line on defense. It's a very weird or bizarre way to say, but they're in a much more safety than the front line, I guess.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. Liz, you had something?
I was just going to go back to, you know, the decision that she and her family made to stay in place, to, you know, not to leave, not to flee, not to go to another location, another city, another country. Did that decision change after a while? Did people eventually say, no, we have to get out of here?
My mom was definitely pushing me away, kicking me out. Okay. My brother could not leave and cannot leave because of his age. I have an older grandma, so that's also an issue. Absolutely, that's not plausible to leave or to go anywhere. At that point, it was just the decision, like, we just have to be here. I don't know for what way we have to be here.
I mean, did you think at some point you just wake up and, you know, maybe it'd be over, or that you just wake up and you'd be annexed with Russia? You know, you'd be just a Russian territory?
Yeah. Up until they left Kyiv and the northern part, northern east part of Ukraine, that was everyday threat.
Yeah. Now, I mean, what does that mean to you to be a part of Russia versus being independent Ukrainian?
That's a very good question. Russia has been stealing everything from us for generations, for hundreds of years, including history, including our language, including everything that you can think of. Fortunately, I've been from the part of Ukraine that more or less have been trying to preserve authentic Ukraine. Of course, we've been under different states, different countries, different empires, but nobody has been treating us worse than Russian.
The generations, there's been nothing but the torture, vandalism, rape, anything bad that you can think of that's been happening under Russia. So it's not even a question of whether to be with Russia or not to be. It's better to die than to be with Russia.
Wow. We've heard about the executions. I mean, it's like they don't care about life in general. It's appalling. One of the things I had noticed that was really heartbreaking to me was images where people have been killed and they have their suitcases as they're trying to flee. When you thought about leaving or considered leaving, was that something that you were thinking about?
You mean about being killed on the way?
Being killed on the way, trying to leave, yes.
Honestly, I never thought of leaving.
You never thought of leaving?
I could never leave. Yes, I could never leave my family. Okay. For me, it was, you know, impossible to even think, and still is impossible to even think if something happens to them and I'm alive. This is something that is beyond my understanding so far.
You were going to stay to protect your family no matter what.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. On the other hand, though, it's been every day constant feeling that, yes, it may just come right into my house or right into like the street that I'm walking. There was like no feeling of safe space anywhere. I know that the basement, you know, the bomb shelters and everything. Well, the unfortunate thing is that we didn't have them enough. We didn't have the good ones, right? Later on, we discovered about the rule of two walls. But at the beginning, there was like no safe place. So everywhere where you go, it's like it's that feeling, especially when the airstrike alarm.
So you were worried about the air raids coming through. So you never knew when you were going to get a bomb or something on your buildings. Yeah. And I know that Ukraine, I think people sometimes think of these war-torn areas as just like rubble already. But from my understanding, Ukraine had grown into a beautiful, thriving country and kind of like pretty much what you'd see here in the United States. And then, you know, to see some of these images of like destruction, and it makes me think about what that would be like here. I mean, it has to be just scary for you, the family, everybody.
Yes,
absolutely. You know, Ukraine has been definitely since 2014, it has been in economical crisis. But we had our European way of our political structure basically going to Europe, right? Everything was raising up. Everything became modern. The economy went better. People started living better. Everything on the street, it was not like a Soviet Union, just the buildings. Everything, the architecture, the historical places, everything is so beautiful. It was beautiful before, but economically, it was about to end. This economical crisis was about to end, you know, with COVID hitting and pandemic hitting. Of course, it didn't help, but it was about to hit. We would need another few years to get out of that crisis and continue living. And then just boom, at one second, everything changes.
So you finally did leave. So what was that experience like? What prompted you to leave? What happened?
Right. So I left in September. That was by choice. Definitely not was forced to leave. I would say that even though there is no safe place in Ukraine, but I lived in a fairly safe zone, you know, where after they left Kyiv, there was no threat of them coming there. It was only airstrikes, basically. At some point, it was a little quieter.
So you thought it was calming down, basically. You're saying you thought it was starting to calm down.
Yes, yes.
So Ukraine's been winning, right? They've been
absolutely
winning this war
because
they've retaken several territories and they're starting to push out Russia. I mean, obviously there's been casualties on both sides, so there's really no winner in this, but they've been definitely making strides. So did you feel like maybe because Ukraine was sort of winning or pushing them back that was a good time to leave?
At that point, actually, Ukraine was at the front, was still, it's never still, but we don't hear about that news unless you are very, very much in connection with the military stuff.
Okay.
You don't hear about that. You don't hear much because it's under the secrecy, which is understandable. There are now no strikes, so much, not so big wins, not big losses. So I decided to go because I thought that I can actually do more while working here. I can help a little bit more over there because I was already thinking about the, you know, the restoration. every building and right. stuff like that.
And how did you get out?
I went through Poland. It took me probably, well, good 24 hours with the break to get through Poland, but it wasn't bad. Usually it would take people 7 days to stay at the border or, you know, like even more. Wow. There were huge lines. I was considerably lucky. We went through the border pretty quick and just to get to the Warsaw and stuff and further, it took longer.
How many people were in your group when you went to Poland? Was it just you or were there many other people were with you?
I was the only one who was actually going to US. The other people that were in the car, there were five other women.
Yes.
Because men are not allowed to leave the country. They went to actually work in Poland for the seasonal job. Because, you know, like everything went down in Ukraine. So like people would search and look up for additional financial support.
Did I hear you say that men are not allowed to leave?
Yeah, certain groups are only allowed to leave that are beyond 60 years old. And the ones that have three children or more, there are maybe like one or two other groups of men. Yeah.
Okay.
Categories. Yeah.
It's pretty typical wartime rules. They want the men to stay back so they can potentially fight. So they let the women and children or the elderly or people who have medical conditions go first.
Yep.
But it's still very jarring to hear.
To hear, you know?
Yes, it is.
It's still very jarring. So how long did you stay in Poland?
For one day only.
And then from Poland,
straight to New York.
Okay, very good. What about friends that are back? Like, do you know anyone that is still trying to get out? Or are people still feeling like, okay, things are subsiding a little bit. Maybe it'll get better.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's not subsiding at all. But as weird as it is, as messed up as it is, people are coming back. They are not leaving. All of my friends are back.
To Ukraine. Some of them never leave.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's their home. Unless people lost everything. And like they basically don't have any place to live. Those are the ones who are staying abroad. Otherwise, people are coming back. A lot of them are coming back right now.
This is from Jacqueline Robinson online. Is there concern that the rest of the world will basically move on the longer this war continues?
Is there a concern that the war will move
on? That the world will move on, that they won't care anymore? Right now, we hear about Ukraine, and we hear about it regularly still on our news cycles. But as it continues into, you know, February, which will make it a year, do you feel like the world will stop caring or that it won't be front and center anymore?
Absolutely. 100% yes. And even though all the politicians and like everywhere in the world, they are supporting, well, everybody of the civilized world, they are supporting and expressing the continuing support for Ukraine. All of the people are fearing that it will stop being important. And that is why I'm so grateful for you guys for doing this. Because every single month, I don't want to say celebrate, it's not a celebration, but every 24th, we're like, okay, like, where are we? You know, like, are we getting somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
Like, is it going to end? People are exhausted. Everybody's exhausted. I understand that. Believe me, like, it is overwhelming. But this is something that I don't even know how to explain. This is a new experience. This is war.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm very curious. Now that you're safe and sound, what is the most difficult part of being back home?
Of being back in New York, of being back in Ukraine.
Being back in the U.S. where you're safe. What's the most difficult part about being back in the U.S.?
You know, I've heard, you know, our psychologists and psychiatrists, they were saying that, you know, the PTSD will kick in once the, you know, like you're in the safe place or after the war is gone, you know, or when it stops. So, and I surely did not know that it would be the case for me, you know.
Wow.
Feeling, you know, coming here at the beginning was so crazy because, you know, you're in the safe zone. but you are jumping off when you hear the helicopter sound or the plane sound. And you're just like, you want to be somewhere under the ground. You want to be somewhere where like it's safe, where like that, you know, within between the two walls or something like that. I prepared myself for some of the emotional issues that I might face, like, you know, people not caring about it, people not still know the difference between Russia and Ukraine. That's what I've been facing before. So I prepared myself for that. Probably the painful part was when people were still like, is it going on? Is it still going on? That was that. Yeah. And of course, like right now, when everything is going there, being experiencing all of this anger and fear for everyone that are left there, a part of the emotion, a part of the experience that I still need to figure out how to deal with.
So would you say that's kind of like a survivor's guilt kind of thing? Where
Might be, yeah.
Yeah. I'm so sorry that you're having to go through all of this. That's absolutely awful.
It's heartbreaking.
Have you been able to connect with any other Ukrainians in New York or some type of support groups there to help you get through the PTSD or to just talk to whenever you need or
talk
to just get
someone.
A bit of home, if you will, while you're in New York?
I've honestly been joining this manifestations in New York, which were organized by Erasmus for Ukraine. It's the group. It's the organization. That's been also helping a lot with humanitarian help. So yes, it's definitely, I live in the area where I knew there were Ukrainians. They used to be Ukrainians some years back, but I never know they are still there. And now that I see the flags there, it really, really helps me think that, oh my gosh, I'm not alone here.
What part of New York are you? I used to live in New York for like 21 years. What part of New York are you in?
Astoria.
Okay. Yep. Makes sense.
Quick comment online from Mike Winter. Republicans retaking the House probably made the situation scarier. This weekend, there were some ridiculous misinformation discussions about the U.S. not having enough weapons. any final questions? Maybe, Gianni, did you want to ask one final question?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to know, I guess, more towards the PTSD, if your family is suffering in that sense. I know that most people are. But if you notice that your family's suffering from any PTSD in the same way you are, or it kind of manifests differently in your family members?
I don't think it manifested yet. I think they are like pulling their strands all together just to go through it because they are still in that zone. So it didn't manifest yet. All I can say is like they are definitely exhausted. Everybody exhausted and everybody's traumatized. It's just to what extent? It will show later.
Yeah, I bet.
Oh, God.
All right, Vita. I want to say thank you so much for sharing your story with us. The world definitely needs to know what's happening in your home. And I noticed when Rob asked the question about home, out of curiosity, where is your home?
Ukraine.
I thought so.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, I'm going to give you a minute for any last words, anything you'd like to say or share with our audience.
No, thank you, guys. Thank you so much for bringing this up, for bringing Ukraine up. I want to thank everybody for the tremendous support, because I think that the countries and the political systems are only helping because of the people protests and manifestations. And I'm forever grateful, and I'm sure that I speak on behalf of everyone. It's so much appreciated, it's so much valued that there's not enough words to express that. So thank you everyone.
We thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. We're happy that you're
safe.
Thank
you for being brave.
I'm glad your family is safe as well.
Your family, take care.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Wow,
what a story. Story.
A very heartwarming story. And I think it's one that, you know, because we've been privileged here in America,
we have
not really have been invaded. You know, we have not been a part of any, like, we've been a part of incidents. They don't like to call them wars, but incidents over the past, you know, few decades, but nothing on this scale. And
no.
There are a lot of civil wars going on around the world. that we know of, some that we, you know, really don't hear about a lot. But it's also very difficult to maintain and manage your identity, your home, when you've been invaded by another country.
So this is very
interesting stuff that I think everyone needs to hear.
She's a fantastic guest for sure. All right, now we've got to get into our topics. Truth, lies, shenanigans. Kind of hard to switch gears after that deep story.
I know. Very deep.
World Cup's going to be deep too.
Qatar is some stuff there.
Well. Oh, yeah. Right.
Rob, you got some more international news. Human rights abuses in Qatar, home of the FIFA World Cup. What's going on?
All right. Well, so as some of you may know, the FIFA 2022 World Cup tournament kicked off today in Qatar and runs for a full month until the final in Doha on the 18th of December. So the tournament opener saw host nation Qatar lose to Ecuador 2-0 in full time today. And over the next 30 days, there are going to be 64 games played by 32 international teams before players return to their respective clubs. So bookies and experts have been checking out the teams, and the favorites are, you know, Brazil, Argentina, France, Spain, England. No real surprises there. U.S. and Canada find themselves rated middle of the pack. And so just so you know, USA
is in group.
Yeah, they're about middle of the pack. The U.S. is in Group B, and they play Wales tomorrow. And Canada's in Group F and plays Belgium on Wednesday.
Despite
the excitement, the host nation selection has been scrutinized harshly and with good reason. Qatar, which is located in the Persian Gulf, won the bid in 2010, and it was speculated that they essentially bought it. They are one of the most oil-rich nations out there. One of the first concessions was that the tournament would be played during the winter months because the temperature in the summer there can exceed 45 degrees Celsius, which is
too
about 113 Fahrenheit. Too hot to play that caliber of soccer. So let's get into some of the nitty-gritty. As far as labor abuses are concerned, the tournament required the construction of 8 stadiums. And during that time, it has been speculated that there are some 6,500 migrant workers from India, Pakistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka who have died due to unsafe work conditions. LGBTQ rights are something that is... really not followed and respected. Khalid Salman of the Qatar World Cup ambassador, or the World Cup ambassador, made heads explode November 8th when he described homosexuality as damage in the mind. So homosexuality still holds legal precedent to be for incarceration and punishment. Not a good place to be. As far as fans are concerned, they have been warned. There is no true freedom of religion in Qatar. So don't preach other religions. Don't criticize Islam because you could be criminally prosecuted. Some of the teams have taken a stand on the human rights issues, wanting it to have it emblazoned on their jerseys. But FIFA officials shot that down because it's a political statement and they don't want to be part of that. So a lot of countries have actually toned down their country's emblems so that they're barely even visible. Then designated alcohol zones. Well, that's just kind of a party thing, but usually Heineken, Budweiser, big sponsors. And in a last minute move, Qatar decided to eliminate beer sales from the stadiums. So there's still select areas where you can drink, but this is a dry country. So pretty much.
Right.
And that's just a quick synopsis of a lot of things that are going on. So my friends, I'm soliciting your thoughts on Qatar hosting the World Cup tournament. If you are going to be watching, and if yes, who you will be supporting?
Liz?
Well, of course, I'm going to be watching. It's my job to watch. And who will I be supporting? Hello, United
US.
States, even though I'd be shocked if we got out of, you know, the first group. I'd be happy. That'd be a good showing for us, considering we didn't qualify for the last World Cup. But in terms of all of the controversies and the human rights violations that you just described, I'm shocked that everyone else is shocked. I'm shocked that everyone else is shocked about this.
That's fair.
One, because again, it's Qatar, but also two, this is the way FIFA and the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, works. at least for the past 2 decades. Remember the Sochi Winter Olympics in Russia? Mm-hmm. The exact same human rights violations that Rob just described were a part of those Olympics, where you had migrant workers who were being overly worked and who built the stadiums, where you had the LBG community being swept off the streets or not allowed to be out openly, where you
had... And it's funny you mention it, Liz, because the last FIFA World Cup was played where? In Russia, in 2018. Russia.
And the funny thing about that, Rob, is that I always forget that 2018 World Cup was in Russia because I blocked it out of my head. But it's one of those things where over the past 2 decades, both FIFA and the IOC are choosing countries based on what? Dollar bills, y'all. It Money. Does not matter about human rights. It does not matter about the greater good of the human race. That's what matters. I currently, I teach sports journalism at the School of the New York Times. And for most of the students that I teach now, they're not sports fans. So they want to know, what else is there to learn about sports besides wins and losses, besides stats? And I always say to them, sports is political.
Politics.
Sports is about everyday lives. It's about what we experience every day. There's just a game attached. And you know how much Qatar spent on this World Cup? $220 billion. The most expensive World Cup on the planet to date. Rob talked about the temperatures. This is the first World Cup where they have to have air conditioning in the stadiums and on the grass.
Oh, wow. So folks don't get the heat stroke.
I was watching the game this morning, Rob, and so they played, Qatar played Ecuador, right? Like Rob said, they lost 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
Ecuador in the stands, you look at all the fans, it was a pretty mixed crowd. Mm-hmm. Men, women, children. On the Qatar side, I don't recall seeing one woman at all. It was all men. It was all men in the crowd. And I got to say, because Qatar, the only reason why they're in the World Cup is because they're the host country. They didn't qualify. They got there by default. Mm-hmm. So technically, they shouldn't even be playing. They shouldn't have a team there. But it was great to see the look of embarrassment on the faces of the Qatar dignitaries in the stands as their team got stomped into the ground. So yeah, I'm going to watch. I'm going to root against them because they don't deserve this. And it's an absolute shame. It's an absolute shame.
So I'm going to jump. Hold on, Gianni. So only because my point is almost related to Lizzie's point, almost directly related. So as I was reading the articles, I was feeling all the anger towards Qatar. And then I ran across a headline that said, "The objections to Qatar hosting the World Cup reek of Eurocentrism." And it was an opinion column by Ahmed Taji on NBCNews.com. And I was like, okay, all right, let me read this because, like you say, I'm all into it. And in the article, he says, "The Qatari people and the Middle East deserve to celebrate the global sport of football. The 2022 World Cup will be a rare opportunity to humanize the Middle East, a contrast to the headlines of war and Islamophobic narratives." He notes that rather than celebrating the first ever World Cup in the Middle East, the first ever, instead, there's an endless stream of negative headlines about Qatar hosting the World Cup. He talks about Qatar being condemned for possibly bribing FIFA to get the games.
But then, of course,
he points out, even if that were true, there's been allegations of corruption in FIFA for decades where bribes were the only way to get the World Cup. And then he talks about the allegations of migrant workers being killed that Rob mentioned, although likely true, obviously. He tried to put in perspective, pointing out, of course, as Lizzie kind of mentioned, Sochi and all of the other human rights violations.
Brazil, South Africa.
Throughout the history of FIFA World Cup, not just Qatar, but again, it seems there's a focus on Qatar, and we're not really celebrating the fact that this is the first.
That is true.
This is the first World Cup in the Middle East ever. So
yeah,
I don't know. I was torn because the atrocities are pretty significant. But at the same time, I do kind of want to celebrate this fact of this first, even if they did have to bribe FIFA officials to get it. Because everybody was bribing FIFA officials to get the World Cup.
I don't have to celebrate it. It's not my job to prop up Islam. That's not
okay. So you have a problem with Islam?
No, I have a problem with his notion that it's our responsibility, especially as the media, to shed a light on the fact that this is the first country, you know, in that region. So that's not my responsibility. If they want a positive light, then they need to do better.
They should have done it right.
That's fair. Johnny?
Simple as that.
I do think it's cool that this is a first for FIFA World Cup, but you got to do it right. It's like a kid trying to steal candy. Like, you don't do things like that. It's unethical. But I was going to ask Lizzie, if this wasn't your job, would you still be watching the World Cup? Like, would you be interested in watching it?
Would I be watching soccer? No.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a soccer fan. No. Let me just answer that and say
football. It's in the FIFA football.
Listen, I am speaking on a North American platform. It's soccer over here. But let me just say that I recognize there is a bit of hypocrisy in all of us as humans. Okay, mm-hmm. That's just who we are as people. And so I do understand your point and what you're saying. And I mean, I still watch the NFL. I still watch the NBA. I'm very critical. Just because, you know, you call out something doesn't mean that you still can't examine it and watch it.
Right.
And so I'll never defend FIFA. I'll never defend the IOC. I think it's all BS. But I also think, I don't know if you guys are familiar with LIV Golf platform now, which is trying to take all of the smoke away from the PGA golf in the United States.
Oh, wow.
But LIV Golf is funded by Saudi Arabia, another country in that region that has tremendous
oil rich
violations, that had 15 terrorists invade U.S. soil, or I'm sorry, U.S. airways on 9/11. The same country whose crown prince basically ordered the assassination of an American journalist at the Saudi Arabian consulate. And we still back them. We still give money. In fact, the Biden administration on Thursday said that we should, you know, lean off of the crown prince of Saudi Arabia as these lawsuits start to come about for him. Mm. So we all are being hypocrites here.
So let me ask this question. So who can host the World Cup in that sense? Because I'd like to point out, I mean, the U.S., most of Europe, of course, Russia, China have all had human rights violations. So who is able to host the World Cup, the FIFA World Cup, if that's the case? Yeah.
Jamaica does not have the infrastructure.
That's the question. I mean, we want to point out Qatar did this, Qatar did that. U.S. is worse, has killed way more people than Qatar.
But the government here in the past 20, 30 years has killed more people here. I'm not talking about internationally, I'm talking about on home soil. The government.
We've talked about the government killing people for centuries, decades.
The police force is not federal government. The police force is in the United States.
We're talking about countries as a whole and their laws and their
our country as a whole is run differently than other countries.
Oh, see.
And we have state government.
See, now you're justifying it to say that, you know, the U.S. is...
I'm explaining government to you.
No.
I'm explaining government to you.
The U.S. is worse than Qatar.
I'm explaining government to you. U.S. is not worse.
We have violated... Our government has violated women's rights. We violated LGBTQ rights. The federal government, we violated human racial rights.
Experimenting on
against
people.
The law in the United States.
Not currently, but it has been.
I'm talking about now.
Places, it is, yes.
In the United States, no, it's not. It's not on the books in the United States.
Sodomy is still on the books in many states.
But see, first of all, sodomy isn't just a homosexual activity, first of all. Let's be clear.
Okay, but it still targets homosexuality. Come on, let's be honest.
But But homosexuality isn't just about the act of sex. So my question to you,
it still targets Qatar, it.
But in Qatar, being homosexual is illegal and is punishable by up to 7 years in prison.
What I'm saying is potato, potato, you're kind of comparing human rights violations. They are all bad.
And be a free woman here.
The U.S. is not better. You sit on these soapboxes and say that the U.S. is better. It's not.
You're bringing up, no, Neil, you're talking cultural.
You cannot compare it to Qatar.
You're talking cultural.
I disagree. I completely disagree.
I'm with Liz.
Completely disagree.
Neil,
completely disagree.
The distinction here is that you're talking about cultural values and norms, where Liz is discussing legal.
In Qatar. We wouldn't be able to have this podcast in Qatar.
That's okay. True. That's
Neil
true.
And I could.
It does affect you. It does affect you differently being there. It's not just a cultural
thing. I mean, there's like places Rob where said. You can smoke weed and places where you can't. I mean, I'm just saying that there are laws that are different all over the world. You can't claim that your law is better than someone else's, is all I'm saying.
I kind of agree to that part.
Yes, you absolutely can. We can absolutely disagree. Look at the inequities in Sharia law. Neil, absolutely.
Disagree.
Absolutely.
Totally disagree. We're going to have to disagree because we're way over time, and our last two topics will have to be quick.
Conversation, though.
This was a pretty deep conversation. All right, so we have to shut it down.
Human rights.
There's a lot of comments online, but we have to try to get some of these comments online.
Loud and wrong once again.
Let's get to real quick. Neo, she's making a valid. This is Mike Winter, and she's distinctions between federal government ordering mass executions of groups of people. I know that our federal government has ordered mass executions of groups of people. So,
When in the last 20 years?
Every time we go to war. So Jacqueline Robinson.
We're talking about in the United States.
So I'm talking about humans. just because it's not internal. See, you're talking about. You're trying to specify that one human rights violation versus another is okay. I disagree.
Influence internationally. What do you mean you disagree?
I disagree. You can't say one human rights violation is better than another.
But we are specifically talking about what's going on in this particular country and people going to that country.
And I'm saying that we have similarly bad human rights violations as a country.
Neil, in 2026, I promise you that travelers from Islamic nations will not be warned to not practice their faith openly in North America. I promise you that's not going to be a warning. So, meh.
That's kind of true, though, Neil.
Okay. All right, so... I still disagree. Jacqueline Robson, you have to remember that Qatar is a theocracy, and there's no way that the U.S. is worse. We do not have a perfect union, but we're always striving to do better.
Yeah.
We even have a female vice president, for goodness sake. You think that's happening in Qatar? Come on.
I mean, I know we can all say that we're better than everyone else. We look from our glass houses.
We're not better.
We're looking from our glass houses, saying that we're better than everybody else. I disagree.
We're
living in our glass houses. Mm-mm. If I throw a rock,
it's not living in a glass house. It's not throw a rock. Glass house. It's
okay.
There's no one on this panel who is not critical of the U.S. government. Hey. First of all, let's be clear on that.
Yeah. All right, we got Lizzie. We're going to make this a quick fire. You got 3 minutes. Sorry about that. We took up a lot of time in that discussion. So,
Lizzie, that was
you're
true.
Up.
So we are going to talk about another act of violence. It did not happen on U.S. soil, but it happened to a U.S. citizen, Shanquella Robinson, who was from Charlotte, North Carolina. She went to Mexico on, I believe it was October 27th, with a group of friends, we're going to put that in quotes, friends, and was dead by the next day. Initially, her friends told officials and her family that she died of alcohol poisoning. But after the autopsy came back and revealed that she had a broken neck and severe injuries to her spine, a homicide investigation began, both in Mexico and in the United States. And now the FBI is involved. Her friends are now making tons of videos and statements on social media saying, wasn't me, I didn't kill her. But these same friends did not even stay with the body. They hightailed it out of Mexico ASAP and have not been in contact with the family since. So my question to the panel, yes, Friends, like Houdini said, friends, how many of us have them? Friends, are these friends or foes? What do you make of this situation?
Let's start with Rob.
Yeah, when I watched the video, it was absolutely shocking. Attacking someone while they're naked puts you at a distinct advantage, and it displays a complete lack of honor on the part of the assailant. If someone was beating on my naked friend, I would drop the phone and help them. It's not let somebody else beat them
down.
That's
a crazy thing.
Messed up, right? That's- and I mean, it speaks volume to the videographer's character. So at the end of the day, it definitely looks like there's shenanigans aplenty, and I hope that they get, I hope that the extradition rules come into play.
Johnny.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely disgusting. I've been hearing about this a lot because she's, obviously she's in my age group, so, you know, it's been everywhere. But I think the reason people too are so invested in this case is because, like Liz said, it's sad to think that people you call your friends or associates would set you up, you know, torture you, and you die. And imagine that being the closest people to you. I know that the guy that was like recording was apparently her best friend of 5 years or something like that. He was the closest one to her. And he was the one who was telling her to fight. And if anyone has seen the video, like the audience members, then you'll see, it's just, thankfully social media helped this case get to FBI status. Because I'm interested to see these people go down. I think that is very, very disgusting.
Yeah, this story was crazy to me. I mean, this woman was beating the shit out of Shanquilla. I mean, and she was not fighting back. I mean, at one point, does your brain say, okay, stop, I'm going to stop doing this? And then what point, like Rob said, does the guy filming it not just say, oh, damn, let me go help her? Because even when he asked at one point, why are you not fighting back? Why are you not fighting back? You know, are you going to fight back? She says, no, very meekly. She says, no, I'm not going to fight back. And then I honestly think at the end of the video, I think that might be the moment that we see, because the woman takes her by her head. Yeah, so she died of she was found with a broken spine, a neck. So she takes her by the head, and you can see in the video that she goes a little bit limp shortly after she's thrown by the head. So, I mean, she might have been limp from the blows, but either way, I mean, it's like horrible. I couldn't believe it.
Imagine her parents having, her dad had to watch it. And speak online and speak to people. Yeah.
It was crazy.
Dad said that she wasn't a fighter, so why would her friends put her in that position to fight? And that's why they know that it was murder.
Real quick, Liz.
Unfortunately, I think this probably had to do with some guy. That's usually the first thing that gets females, young ladies fighting one another is over a guy. But I've taken, and Gianna, you'll do this as you get older if you haven't started to do it already, but I've taken numerous trips with my girlfriends, with my groups of friends, out of town, out of the country, whatever. And we have one motto, actually two mottos. No chica left behind. So there's no way I would have left my friend in Mexico. But also, exactly. Not on my watch. I'm not allowing my friend to get hurt, to walk off with somebody they don't know, to allow somebody to attack them. Those are your friends. And so it's really sad that in her final moment, her friends were not there for her. She had no friends there for her. And
no question.
I feel horrible that this happened. Horrible.
I know.
Horrible.
All right. Last one. All right. I'm going to make this really, really quick. But I just want to talk about Hakeem Jeffries, because you may not know, but shortly after her husband was recently attacked by a MAGA extremist, Nancy Pelosi decided, who she was 82 years old, she decided to finally give up being the Speaker of the House or being the highest ranking member, calling for new blood to lead the Democrats. And it's looking like that new blood is Hakeem Jeffries of New York. He put in his bid this weekend to be the first Black person to lead a major political party in Congress. And he'll do that potentially along with Representatives Catherine Clark of Massachusetts and Pete Aguilar of California, who would replace the outgoing majority leader, Representative Steny Hoyer of Maryland, and the whip, Representative James Clyburn of South Carolina, who are both also in their 80s. Quickly, share your thoughts on Hakeem Jeffries and what this change means for leadership in the Democratic Party. I'll start with Gianni.
I mean, like Pelosi said, it's time for a new generation of leaders to come in. So I think that's a good thing. Is it rude to call some? Yeah, that's ageist. I think that it's good that we have some fresh blood. I think.
What do you want to call her? Old? What?
Did you want to call her old? Yeah, I was going to call her old.
Is she old? She old.
I mean, I want to be 82 one day. I don't want somebody to call me old, but no.
But you'll be old.
She's old. Listen, today is Joe Biden's 80th birthday. He's old. He's old.
What is it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh my God.
He's old.
Okay, so
he's got old folks in the country.
All right. Kind of wild. I think like the prior generation, the prior generation of like Black politicians, they were like in the civil rights, right? Like era. And I think that, what's his name?
Hakeem.
Hakeem Jeffries. Hakeem,
yes. He kind of comes from a different perspective. Like he came when America was like, had different races and it was multicultural. So he, I like him. I think we'll, and he's from Brooklyn. So.
All right, Rob.
I think that representation matters. I'm doing a little bit of homework on Hakeem Jeffries. He's got some impressive credentials in the last 13, 15 years. So, you know what? Yeah, like Johnny was saying, it's good to change things up, revitalize things, and bring a fresh new perspective to the job.
Liz, 13 seconds.
Let me just say that in Qatar, there would be no Nancy Pelosi. There would be no Hakeem Jeffries.
Oh, there might be a Hakeem Jeffries.
Not a Black Hakeem Jeffries, unless he is from Qatar, there would be no diversity within political house. So, yeah.
I don't know. I think it's the same shade as many people in the Middle East.
It has nothing to do. Okay, now you're sounding real ignorant. It has nothing to do with shade.
No.
Help y'all's boy.
All right. You know, we didn't do this Truth Lies Shenanigans, but we're out of time, so we're gonna save that for next week. All right, let's get to our game show. All right, because of time, we're only going to go two rounds. But this quiz is provided by CNN, and it's the Thanksgiving trivia quiz.
Oh, come on.
All right, we'll go around the horn.
It's American. It's American Thanksgiving.
American Thanksgiving, yeah. So we'll go around the horn, answer the question correctly, get a point. Answer it wrong, you get nothing. Person with the most points at the end of the two rounds, maybe three, wins the final word for the show. First question, we're starting with Gianni Storm. While historic accounts vary regarding what exactly was eaten at the first Thanksgiving feast, what type of food was definitely not present in 1600s New England when pilgrims first arrived? Would that be pumpkin, cranberries, potatoes, or corn?
Cranberries? That's a cool.
Let's see. That is incorrect. Answer. That would be potatoes.
Potatoes.
They had cranberry sauce.
Potatoes.
Potatoes are from South America, and they weren't introduced to America until the 1700s.
I should have known
they had cranberries.
All right, Robbie, let's see.
Yeah, I don't either.
This type of food is not common on traditional Thanksgiving tables now, but probably would have been served at the first Thanksgiving meal. Would that be seafood, tomato soup, sausages, or pancakes?
Seafood.
Seafood, I would think seafood too. Yes, that is correct. That is correct.
Thanksgiving crab.
Thanksgiving crab. Coastal settlements meant plenty of seafood, especially shellfish like lobster, oysters, clams, and mussels. All right, Lizzie. This Thanksgiving staple was invented in 1950 by a Campbell Soup Company employee named Dorcas Riley with the hope of boosting sales of one of Campbell's products. Would that be jellied cranberry sauce, green bean casserole, sweet potato casserole, or corn pudding?
Cranberry
sauce.
Yeah, I would guess cranberry sauce too. That is incorrect. Oh,
really?
That is incorrect. Green bean casserole, which is disgusting.
Who is buying that?
We're going to be a sale.
If green bean casserole is made right, it's not terrible. Uh-oh.
So, you tried it. Neo's tried it.
I've had green bean casserole before, yes.
But would you buy Campbell's
green bean casserole? Oh, hell no. Hell
no.
Hell no. All right. Gianni, back to you. Robbie's in the lead, the Canadian. All right.
Oh, God.
Though they're often used interchangeably, what is the biggest technical difference between stuffing and dressing?
Would I that never be know.
How they're prepared, Gianni, what seasonings are used, the consistency, there is no difference.
Okay. consistency. Are they prepared? The consistency.
I believe that is incorrect. Yeah, it's how they're prepared. So yeah,
stuffing goes in the turkey.
Stuffing.
In the turkey.
So it gets all the juices from the turkey
because it's stuffing. Aren't the consistencies are different though, right, Liz? No?
I mean, potentially.
No. Like, I'm making dressing because we're not having turkey, but it would be the same dressing I would make that I would put in a turkey.
That you put in this turkey. Okay.
All right.
I'm really losing.
Rod B. Yeah, you lost. You've already lost. You're done.
Horrible.
What is the most popular Thanksgiving side dish according to a 2020 YouGov poll? Would that be stuffing/dressing, macaroni and cheese, sweet potato casserole, or mashed potatoes? Rod B.
You Americans. No. I'm gonna go with mashed potatoes because everyone wants a bland side for everyone.
Yeah.
How are you correct? That seems, I mean, that's correct. Sorry.
I don't think that's correct at all.
Wow.
Mashed potatoes.
Probably
they just rigged.
Yeah, I don't know where that is. We don't even do mashed potatoes. I haven't seen mashed potatoes at Thanksgiving feast in like.
I mean, I make ever. Mashed potatoes. I make garlic mashed potatoes.
I don't.
Garlic parm mashed potatoes. But
see?
How about the
mashed potatoes? Ooh,
that sounds good. All right, well, I'm going to let you answer the last one, but Robbie already wins. So while sweet potatoes were readily available in America during the first Thanksgiving, the marshmallow top version wasn't popularized until much later. What do we have to thank for this gooey addition? Or who do we have to thank? Ooh. Would it be the French, the Turkish, the Danes, or the Peruvians? Lizzie.
Who was it?
I have no idea. Let's go with Rob and his French speakers.
French.
Ah, yeah, c'est bon.
That is correct. That is correct. But Rob B wins the game.
What? That's a lie.
Mashed potatoes is bullshit. I don't think that's right.
That's a big old lie.
Kind of wild.
Mashed potatoes, we're in the world. Who did this survey? All right, let's get some shout outs.
Untrue.
All right, Lizzie, let's get some shout outs in. What's going on?
Whoop, whoop. Uh-oh. Shout out to the Washington football team. They just won two in a row. They beat the Eagles on Monday Night Football. And then they beat the lowly Texans today. Whoop, 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 whoop. WFT. We are now 6-5. Six and five in the nation's capital.
Hey.
Hi, Robbie.
Special birthday shout out to my mother-in-law, Raina, and a shout out to all of my fellow Northerners. Take heart, grab your shovels and snow gear. We've got this.
I like that. Johnny Storm.
Shout out to you guys, shout out to the audience, and just have a really good holiday this coming up week. Enjoy your family, be safe, stay home, hug people, hug a tree, smile, and yeah.
And stay out of Johnny's truck.
And for my shout out, I just want to say have a happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I hope you have a fantastic Thanksgiving. Like Johnny said, enjoy it with your family, your friends. Have a very happy Thanksgiving.
Everyone have some green bean casserole.
And some mashed potatoes, green bean casserole, mashed potatoes for Thanksgiving.
I don't need some mashed potatoes, but green bean casserole?
Ew.
All right. Thank all of you for joining us. We hope you learned something, gained a new perspective, or simply had some laughs today. We will be off next weekend to enjoy the Thanksgiving holiday with our families. We hope you do the same. In the meantime, you can check out all our previous episodes by subscribing to us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, anywhere you listen to podcasts. And it looks like our winner for the final thought is Mr. Robbie.
So as Thanksgiving approaches, just remember to reach out to your loved ones. Be kind, and if it's within your means, participate in a food drive or a local activity to help someone in your community.
Love that.
Ooh, yes, do that. That's a good one.
All right. Thank you, Robbie Rock, Lizzie, Gianni. But most importantly, we've got to thank you for listening to our shenanigans each and every week. You guys have a great Thanksgiving. See you next time.
Eat lots.